So let's start with electrochemistry. So dry cell, the one which is cylindrical in shape and which is used in our TV remotes, maybe our toy cars of our children, or maybe anything else, maybe remotes or small circuits or small components. So dry cell is used in them and they are not rechargeable mostly. The ones which are used in camera, those are rechargeable, but the ones which we use in non-rechargeable form are dry cells. So this dry cell is used to power our electrical and electronic equipments because it generates electricity. But do you know how does a dry cell generate electricity? See, it's very interesting. Dry cell generates electricity through a chemical reaction. So in a dry cell, chemical energy is converted into electrical energy. Chemical energy gets converted into electrical energy. So that's really interesting. So the origin of electricity and its production comes through chemistry. Chemistry can answer our problems and questions related to electricity. So that's an advantage of chemistry. Electrochemistry is the area of chemistry which is concerned with interconversion of chemical and electrical energy. So chemical energy gets converted into electrical one, and electrical energy gets converted into chemical energy. That's the way it goes. So it also deals with the resistance and conductance of aqueous electrolytic solutions. The determination of conductivities of aqueous electrolytic solutions provides us an information on the extent of ionization of electrolytes in water. So you can see over here the advantages of electrochemistry. They are so many. There are so many advantages of electrochemistry. The study of electrochemical cells is very important in science and technology. These electrochemical cells help us a lot, be it the toy cars of your child or yours when you were small, or your small sister or small brother, be it your remote of your phone, or be it the battery of your mobile phone on which you are maybe listening to this podcast. So it's very important. Many of you people have must have learned about the preparation of sodium hydroxide. This sodium hydroxide is widely used in the manufacture of soaps, detergents and paper by electrolysis of NaCl. Electrolysis is possibly the only means to produce fluorine. The processes such as electrorefining, which is for purification of metals, or electroplating, which is for coating one metal is on the surface of another, of electroplating, these are examples of electrochemical processes. We have already learnt redox reactions. A redox reaction forms the basis for the generation of electricity by chemical reactions, and also for chemical reactions brought out by means of electricity. These processes are carried out in an electrochemical cell. So electrochemistry deals with the design and operation of such cells. The current research in electrochemistry is focused on the design of fuel cells, and the fuel cells are being explored as convenient and compact source of electricity. See, fuel cells are so beneficial. We require them even in space technology. In space, we cannot carry dozens of mass, right? We cannot carry a car engine and put it on a rocket and expect it to give us results, right? With being thrust efficient, we also need to make sure that it is mass efficient. It needs to be efficient in its mass. We cannot carry a huge payload. In fact, we need to decrease the payload continuously. That's the reason there are different types of engineers present over there. There are even cost-cutting engineers present, and even compact engineers present over there. So they make the design smaller and smaller. So now we will move to electrical conduction. So electric current represents a charge transfer. It is a transfer of charge represented by electricity. So there are two types of conductors which give rise to two types of conduction of electricity. First is a metallic conductor. Metallic conductor gives to metallic conduction, and second is ionic conduction. So in metallic conduction, electrical conduction happens through metals, which involves a direct flow of electrons from one point to other. It's a direct flow wherein one point to other passes continuously, and the electrons in conduction band are free to move and hence flow under the influence of applied electrical potential, and the metal conductors are thus electronic conductors. Next is about ionic conduction. Electrolytic conduction involves conduction of electric current by the movement of ions of the electrolytes as well. In this type of conduction, the charge transfer occurs in the form of movement of ions through molten electrolytes or the aqueous solutions of electrolytes. Substances such as ionic salts, strong or weak acids, and bases are the electrolytes. These dissociate into ions when dissolved in polar solvents such as water. Such ionic solids dissociate into ions in molten state as well. So conduction through electrolytic conductors involves transfer of matter from one part of the conductor to other part, and it means that the current flowing through an electrolytic conductor is accompanied by a chemical change. This is about electrolytic or ionic conduction. In electrolytic or ionic conduction, next part is about the information provided by measurement of conductivities of solution. So by measuring the conductivity of solution, we can get a lot of information about them. So the conducting and non-conducting nature of solutions can be identified by measurement of their conductivity. Sucrose and urea do not dissociate in the aqueous solutions. The conductivities of these solutions are nearly the same as that of water. These substances are called as non-electrolytes. On the other hand, substances like potassium chloride, acetic acid, sodium hydroxide, hydrogen chloride dissociate in the aqueous solutions. The conductivities of the aqueous solutions are higher than that of water. These are called electrolytes. Electrolytes conduct electricity in molten state or when dissolved in water. So we first saw non-electrolytes, then we saw the electrolytes. Again, let's just revise what are non-electrolytes and electrolytes. Non-electrolytes are the ones in which the conductivities of the solutions are nearly the same as that of water. And electrolytes are the ones in which conductivities of the aqueous solutions are higher than that of water. Now, don't expect it to be lesser than water in any other case. Now, the weak acids are weak bases, are weak electrolytes, whereas strong acids and strong bases are strong electrolytes, because it's about the exchange of ions and it's about the exchange of electrons. Next is about electrical conductance of a solution. How does electrical conductance of solution occurs? And in it, there is a description about conductivity, molar conductivity, the relation between K and lambda, the variation of conductivity with concentration, and the variation of molar conductivity with concentration, and all these variations. So it is a huge topic. What I will do is, I'll discuss this huge topic in the second session, wherein we will give it a complete effort and we will try to understand this complete topic in real details. So till then, make sure to save the podcast and let's continue this. I'll just add this second session just after this episode. Now let's continue with the further part of electrochemistry. We have done the first part related to electrical conduction and the introduction of electrochemistry. Now there remains the part of electrical conductivity of a solution. So let's see. We know the Ohm's law, right? The Ohm's law says V equals IR, or V is directly proportional to current and inversely proportional to resistance. So R of a conductor is equal to the electrical potential difference V divided by the electric current I. The SI unit of potential is volt and that of current is ampere. So the unit of electrical resistance is ohm, denoted by the symbol omega. You must be knowing omega. If you don't know omega, you may search on Google. You will get the symbol of omega. So omega's units dimensions are VA inverse, which is volt ampere inverse. The electrical conductance G of a solution is reciprocal of resistance. Now don't misunderstand this capital G with galvanometer, nor do misunderstand it with gravitational constant. So G equals 1 by R, or we can say G is inversely proportional to resistance. So resistance increases, so does the G decreases. And so as G increases, the resistance goes on decreasing. Now the relation is not perfect, it goes on decreasing, but there will be some changes in the graph. The SI unit of G, which is electrical conductance, is Siemens, denoted by S, which is equal to ohm inverse. And therefore, we write S equals ohm inverse, which equals AV inverse, which equals CV inverse S inverse, where C represents coulomb, the unit of electricity related to current strength in ampere, and time in seconds, as C equals AS. So don't get panicked, okay? It is easy enough, decently easy. Don't just get panicked. Many people get panicked after listening to a lot of units and dimensions. It's just the basic stuff. It's just made complex, or it has become accidentally complex in an order to make it universal. So the electrical resistance of a conductor is proportional to L length and inversely proportional to cross-sectional area A. Thus, R is directly proportional to A and inversely proportional to A, or R equals rho into L by A. Now, what is rho over here? The rho is the proportionality constant and is called resistivity of the conductor. So you may question, what is resistivity? Resistivity is the resistance of a conductor of unit length and unit cross-sectional area. Now, scientists, when they want to generalize things, when they want to make things easy, when they want to get a universal formula applicable in most of the cases, what they do is they take any of those units and convert it into 1 meter. I mean, give it 1 unit. So any of those length or maybe area you can take, and you can give it the dimensions of one unit. The unit can be anything. What happens because of this? The computation of that one is not required to be done every time. So if you have a box which has a dimension of length of 1 meter, so you don't need to care about that 1 meter again. You just need to use the formula. And this also gives the smallest unit to us. I mean, if all the quantities of a formula are 1, 1 and 1, then what will happen is the end result will be something. So the end result may not be 1, it will be something else. But this end result gives us the baseline from which the calculation starts. For example, in meters, the smallest is 1 meter. In the same way, for a specific quantity, now we are considering electrical conductance. So for electrical conductance, the smallest value will be something x, y or z. This needs to be defined, and that's the reason they give it a value 1. So over here, proportionality constant, that is rho, is called resistivity of the conductor, and it is the resistance of a conductor for a unit length and unit cross-sectional area. Now let's move to conductivity. These are metals, these are conductors. They will conduct. So their conductivity is G equals 1 by R, and R is directly proportional to length L and inversely proportional to its cross-sectional area. Therefore, it follows that G is directly proportional to its cross-sectional area. So G has been done over here. G equals K into A by L. K is the proportionality constant. Remember, when we remove that sign of directly proportional and inversely proportional, what happens is, in order to make it constant, we need to add a constant over there. So that constant is the proportionality constant K over here. And it depends on the length and cross-sectional area of the conductor. Now remember, the value of G will be equal to the value of K if the length and cross-sectional area of the conductor are unity. So this is the way they try to make things simpler, but for understanding it becomes complex. But it is necessary, because while calculations, we need to make things simpler, or else there will be a lot of mistakes, and that's what we don't want, right? Next is conductivity. So conductivity is the electrical conductance of a conductor of unit length and unit area of cross-section. In other words, you can say that the conductivity is the electrical conductance of a unit cube of material, and conductivity of a solution of an electrolyte is called electrolytic conductivity. This refers to the electrical conductance of unit volume of a solution. So K equals G into L by A, which equals 1 by R into L by A, which equals L by AR. So combination of the equation saying R equals rho L by A and the equation saying K equals G into L by A, we get that K equals 1 by P. So this is a very simple formula. K, which is the proportionality constant, equals 1 by P, or we can say inverse of the proportionality constant of the resistivity of the conductor. So now let's see molar conductivity. Now remember, conductivity is denoted by the symbol K, and molar conductivity is denoted by the symbol lambda. Now lambda is like a hat. In French, there is a hat on H, that same hat. So the electrolytic conductivity is not suitable for comparing conductivities of different solutions. We cannot compare the conductivities of different solutions by electrolytic conductivity. So the conductivity of a solution depends on number of ions present in unit volume of solution. So the solution of higher concentration contains more ions and exhibits higher conductivity than the solution of lower concentration. So to compare the conductivities of different solutions, they must have the same concentration. If their concentration differs, how will we be able to measure anything related to them? It's not possible. So what happened is, in 1880, the German physicist F.W.G. Kohlrausch introduced the term molar conductivity denoted by lambda. The molar conductivity of an electrolytic solution is the electrolytic conductivity K divided by its molar concentration E. So lambda equals K by Z. The SI units of K are S meter inverse and that of C are mole meter cube inverse. The hence SI units of lambda are S meter square mole inverse, and the common units employed for molar conductivity are ohm inverse centimeter square mole inverse. Now let's see the significance of molar conductivity. What is the significance of this thing? So to understand the significance of lambda, consider a volume of a solution containing 1 mole of dissolved electrolyte. There is a dissolved electrolyte in it. And suppose that the solution is dissolved and placed between two parallel electrodes 1 centimeter apart and large enough to accommodate it. So the electrical conductance exhibited by this solution is the molar conductivity. And the molar conductivity is the electrical conductance generated by all the ions in 1 mole of the electrolyte. This is the significance of molar conductivity. Now, if you want to know more about the significance of molar conductivity, what you can do is, you can search over YouTube and get some experiments or get some real experiments and real applications of molar conductivity. Since I cannot show you the real experiments over here, that's the reason I limited to the reading part or the explaining part itself. Next is the relation between K and lambda. First we saw conductivity, which is K, and then we saw molar conductivity, which is lambda. Now scientists, they have this very burning desire to mix up all the shit and then make it worse. So what they did is, they decided to make a relation between K and lambda. What is the relation? So conductivity K is the electrical conductance of 1 centimeter cube of solution. If V is the volume of solution in centimeter cube, 1 mole of dissolved electrolyte is having a electrical conductance of lambda. So each 1 centimeter cube portion in the volume V has conductance K. And total conductance of V centimeter cube is KV, which is molar conductivity. Thus we have lambda equals K into V. Now let's see the concentration of this solution. The concentration is in C mole per liter, which equals C mole per liter upon 1000 centimeter cube liter inverse, which equals C by 1000 mole centimeter cube inverse. Now this is all the calculation part. At the end, what we get is lambda equals 1000 K by C. That's it. That's what you need to remember. Lambda is equal to 1000 K by C. Next is variation of conductivity with concentration. Now this conductivity will change along with change in concentration. First there was a concentrated hydrochloric acid, and then there is a dilute hydrochloric acid. So the conductivity will be different for both of them. The electrical conductivity is the electrical conductance of unit volume of solution. It depends on the number of current carrying ions present in unit volume of the solution. Now, an increase in the total number of ions is not in proportion of dilution, and hence the number of ions per unit volume of solution decreases. This results in decrease of conductivity with decrease in concentration of solution. Now, they have not given you a lot of numericals about it. They just want to emphasize on understanding these concepts rather than going for the numericals and just rote learning that stuff. That's what they don't like, I think. Now let's move to the variation of molar conductivity concentration. We saw the variation of conductivity with concentration. Now let's see the variation of molar conductivity concentration. Molar conductivity is the electrical conductance of 1 mole of an electrolyte in a given volume of a solution. Increasing number of ions produced in solution by 1 mole of the electrolyte leads to increased molar conductivity. Next is the variation of molar conductivity with concentration. Variation of molar conductivity with concentration in case of strong acid and weak electrolytes is qualitatively different. Let's first take strong electrolytes. In strong electrolytes, lambda equals lambda naught minus A into root C, where A is the constant. For strong electrolytes, a plot of lambda versus root C is a linear graph. Now let's move to weak electrolytes. For weak electrolytes, the variation of lambda with root C is not linear. Just remember this much. With strong electrolytes, the variation of lambda with root over C being conductivity, is a linear line, while that with a weak electrolyte is not linear. What you can do is, the entire concept of variation of molar conductivity with concentration sums up in a small graph which can be searched over Google, saying variation of lambda with root C, which is root over conductivity. And you get the graph wherein there is a sloped graph for weak electrolytes and there is a straight linear graph for strong electrolytes. Next is the Kolrosch law of independent migration of ions. This law states that an infinite dilution of each ion migrates independent of co-ion and contributes to total molar conductivity of an electrolyte irrespective of the nature of other ion to which it is associated. So lambda naught equals n plus into lambda naught plus plus n minus into lambda naught minus, where lambda plus and lambda minus are molar conductivities of cation and anion respectively, and n plus and n minus are the number of moles of cation and anion specified in the chemical formula of the electrolyte. So there are some applications of Kolrosch law. The first is, it can be used to calculate the molar conductivity. That's obvious, which we know. The second is that this theory is useful in calculating lambda naught values of weak electrolytes from those of strong electrolytes. So what happened is, there is a relation now between strong electrolytes molar conductivity and weak electrolytes molar conductivity. Because of this, from strong electrolytes molar conductivity, we can determine the molar conductivity of weak electrolytes as well. So these are some applications of Kolrosch theory. Next is the molar conductivity and degree of dissociation of weak electrolytes. Degree of dissociation, which is alpha, of weak electrolytes is related to its molar conductivity at a given concentration C by the equation alpha equals lambda C by lambda naught, where lambda C is the molar conductivity of weak electrolyte at concentration C and lambda naught is the molar conductivity at zero concentration. So we talked a lot about conductivity and molar conductivity, but how do we really measure this thing? So let's move to the real application of measurement of conductivity. The conductivity of a solution can be determined from the resistance measurement by Wheatstone bridge. Now remember, there is already a podcast small session made over Wheatstone bridge. You may search it and you will get it. Wheatstone bridge is one of the very easy concepts, which says that P by Q equals R by S. So you can find the value of any fourth resistance if you know the value of any three resistances. So that same principle of Wheatstone bridge is used over here. What they do is, they make a conductivity cell. By the way, if you have no idea about Wheatstone bridge, you may search it and you will get it. So, conductivity cell. The conductivity cell consists of a glass tube with two platinum plates coated with a thin layer of finely divided platinum black. This is achieved by the electrolysis of solution of chloroplatinic acid. What is chloroplatinic acid? It's chlorine and platinum. So the cell is dipped in a solution whose resistance is to be measured. Now you may get a figure of this over Google. Just search conductivity cell, go to images section, and you will get a figure, a diagram about the conductivity cell. Now, first, in order to understand this stuff, you need to understand what is a cell constant. So the conductivity of an electrolytic solution is given by K equals 1 by R into L by A. So for a given cell, the ratio of separation L between the two electrodes divided by the area of cross section A of the electrode is called the cell constant. Thus, cell constant equals L by A. So the SI unit of cell constant is meter inverse, which is conveniently expressed in centimeter inverse. So the equation then becomes K equals cell constant by R. The determination of conductivity consists of three steps. I will just summarize you the three steps because it will take a lot of time to get in detail. In fact, you can go over Google and again search measurement of resistance. You will get a diagram over there. First is determination of cell constant. We first determine the cell constant with the help of a Wheatstone bridge and the conductivity cell, for which the principle says that R of solution upon length of the wire equals R of the unknown solution upon length of the resistance wire. So cell constant equals K of the solution into R of the solution. Second step is determination of conductivity of given solution. So K equals cell constant by R of solution. First we find the R of solution in the first step, then we go and add this in the formula K equals cell constant by R of solution. After substituting it, we get the value of K. We already knew conductivity. So now after getting that, we need to calculate the molar conductivity, which is lambda, which equals 1000 K by C. From this, we have already got C, we have already got R of solution, we have already got cell constant. So now we get the molar conductivity as well. So in three steps, we get the conductivity of the cell as well, also the molar conductivity of the cell. And it is a very useful process. With this, we complete the part of conductivity, molar conductivity, relation between them, variation of conductivity, Kohlrausch law, variation of molar conductivity concentration, variation of molar conductivity and degree of dissociation. And then we go to the measurement of conductivity as well. Now, after completing this much of part in so less time, actually people take over 2 to 3 hours to complete this shit. But what I do is I break down the stuff in points. I then again break it down. And then I take the essential parts, because not everything is important for you, right? It's only the explanation, which they think is the explanation, but it's actually an irritation for us because they make it way complex, way huge, and that's irritating. So what I do is I previously make it small, because at the end of the day, you're not going to remember the entire portion. You don't have a slight chance to remember. Actually, our brain can actually recollect only 4% of the information after a specific period of time. So what you do is, when you try to understand and try to learn everything, you actually make neural pathways in your brains, which requires a lot of energy. Okay, you waste a lot of your energy in learning stuff, which actually is good for making you better at learning, but it is a waste of time. Or else what you can do is, in that same time, if you invest it in learning something which is a skill, it will remain with you. But this thing, you are actually connecting neural pathways in your brain to remember this shit, which is not required. It is consuming your energy, it is consuming your blood, it is consuming your food, it is consuming your brain. And in return, you get lesser marks because the teacher cuts marks. That's a lot of problem over there. It's really going bad over there. So I have just got diverted because of this rote learning stuff. So what I did is I made it shorter and shorter in order to make it so short that you just get the essentials. And then when you read this stuff again, it becomes easier, way easier. So with this, I complete this session. Now tomorrow or day after tomorrow, I'll upload the third part, which is about the electrochemical cells. After there, there is electrolytic cells. And after electrolytic cells, we see the galvanic or voltaic cells. And then the electric potential or cell potential. Then galvanic cells, thermodynamic galvanic cells, reference electrodes. There is a lot of stuff over here. So I stop this session over here. This has gone huge. It's 21 minutes. So let's see you sooner. Bye-bye. Thank you.